Episode 69. It's a good life, babe.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back. It's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans, episode 69, part one.
I'm just glad that we're so mature in our mid-40s, man, dude. That we just lead it off with the Waka Waka.
It's so bad.
Music.
It's like, what are we going to do on
April
420? Like, are we just going to celebrate that, too?
Yeah.
Every time that rolls around twice
yeah,
a day.
Right.
Jesus Christ. What's wrong with us?
11-11. It's 11-11, everyone. 11-11.
Spencer, what's up, dude?
Oh, not much. Just, hanging in there.
We're all exchanging shitting grins right now. I don't know why.
Yeah, what's going on, Spence? What's happening, man?
Not much. Still trying to wrap my head around Game of Thrones last night.
All right, let's talk about that.
Oh, boy.
Explain it from your perspective. What happened?
They spent too much time on Theon. I think it kind of took away from the whole Arya-Sansa storyline. It's a little upsetting, but in the end, Cersei kind of made the whole episode work.
And why is that?
I think it was just the whole exchange with Jaime when she was like, you know, she played everyone real good. You know, like, I'm not going to side with you. Okay, you convince me. I'll help you out. And then just like, once she gets the one person she does trust, she's like, you're an idiot. How do you not realize I'm going to betray them like we always do?
Right.
Folks, we're supposed to have a guest tonight. And I just want to say shout out to James Andrews, New Orleans musician.
Supposed to be our guest tonight.
Who has not made it by yet. We're hoping he's still going to show up, folks. Because that's a good get. It's what you call a good get. On the podcast.
It's a good get, but we also got Randy Perez on the hooks, guest of the podcast. He's on his way. He's going to be here in about 10 minutes.
That's right.
We're going to have him on the show. Look, I'm just going to say this about last night's episode that Joel tried to segue us out of, but let's face it, no one cares what Joel thinks about Game of Thrones because it's the most popular television show in America right now, and people love the shit out of it, including me. And I'll just say this, that, again, I'm sticking to my predictions. I think most of them have come true so far. Littlefinger finally got his comeuppance. I agree with you that they didn't spend enough time in the story developing how the sisters were coming back together, the Stark sisters. After all this time watching the kids get abused, raped, tortured, the youngest brother getting murdered on the battlefield, all of this stuff has...
Well, it just seems like they left Bran out by a tree all season and then bring him in for this one scene, and it's like, oh, hey, yeah.
By the way, I know everything.
We know everything you did, Littlefinger, because our brother, who we've left at this tree in the snow all season, has finally told us everything that's going on. We finally went by the tree, and he told us.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that they should have had some kind of hinting, some kind of clever way that they could have demonstrated to us that there was a wink and a nod understanding between
the
sisters.
Well, like all these flashbacks they've been doing with him for like John's whole lineage and everything and heritage, they could have done the same thing with him figuring out everything with Littlefinger. Shit, throwing some stuff like when he was younger with Catelyn Stark and all that. That would have been great.
You knew that his fate was sealed when they cut to the straight-on close-up of Bran and the straight-on close-up of Littlefinger, when Bran recites this quote, this philosophical quote that only somebody who had a conversation with Littlefinger in the past would have known. And because he uses his magical powers in order to know that quote, you get this shot. I guess it was in like episode 4 or something, episode 5. And I mean, right at that moment, it's like it's a shot that they use in filmmaking, television making, that indicates that somebody's done. That's it. That guy's, his goose is cooked. So it's like we all knew that it was coming. at some point, and they just should have spent a little bit more time. And I agree, they spent too much time on Theon. I feel like that story is done at this point, you know?
Well, I think, who fucking cares about Theon anymore?
Thank you.
That's where I'm coming from. It's an unnecessary story arc at this point. There's a lot of story arcs they haven't included that would have been a lot more interesting than the Theon one. But, you know, at the same time, I am happy that Jon finally got to bang his aunt. I was really pumped for incest this time.
You were, yeah. Right.
Normally, I don't approve of incest, but this time I was really, really rooting for it. I don't know what came over me, but I... It's like when you watch that taboo porn, sometimes it just has to happen.
I think maybe somebody's at the door right now. Could be wrong. Let me check. Yeah. Well, look, we knew that it was going in that direction. We know that the Targaryens like to get it on in the family. And,
but they don't know their family yet.
They don't know that they're family yet, which is a weird thing, is that they established the fact that Targaryens like to get it on inside the family, and they don't... And yet these two don't know that one knows that she's a Targaryen, but the other one doesn't, so they don't know that they're related at all. And then it's confirmed, again, through Bran, who knows everything. Except,
if you don't know you're related, it's not incest.
Oh, there you go.
I don't.
No, rule. I think it is.
I don't think
no,
that's think true.
No, that's a rule.
No, it is.
No, it's a rule.
If you have a kid, it's still inbred and still probably going to look like an Appalachia baby.
No, I'm just saying it's you can't. You don't get to call it incest.
So you do.
If you find out after the fact in your mind, then it's definitely incest.
Well, no, if you find out later, but if you never know that person was your was a relative.
It's an odd, it's a conundrum.
Yeah, I don't.
Right, technically it's still incest.
I think it's pretty black and white.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that.
I think it is black and white, but I don't think what you're describing is black and white.
I think it's brother and sister and stepsister. That's what it is.
Well, this was aunt.
Anyway,
and
nephew.
First, our aunt and nephew's okay.
We had the first, second line of the season on Sunday.
So look.
It's a good life, baby. Let's just say this. Joel's Tales from North. Okay. That's everybody.
Back to Thrones?
Back to Thrones.
All right.
So here's the next thing that I'm sticking with my predictions. Everybody can take this to the bank. Here it goes. Cersei becomes the Ice Queen. She has an ice baby at some point. The whole Euron army and the army that she hires, they all get turned into dead army people, and or dead people, whatever it is they call them. So they're gonna march south with them, and the army's gonna.
They call them dem zombies.
Yeah, they're gonna call them zombies.
Dem zombies.
I don't know. What are my other predictions? Let's see. John, maybe, I don't know. He's Azor Ahai. Dany is dead. She's gonna die. We talked about that last time. Daenerys is going to die.
I assume anyone listening now listen to that as well.
I think it's going to be Shakespearean at the end. I think all of them are going to die except for...
Well, I think that's how it's going to go with Cersei and being killed by Jaime.
I think there's only going to be a couple of people that survive. I think they're all going to die in this Shakespearean hell. I think that the Ice King is briefly going to ascend the Iron Throne, and then Bran is going to blow up his head scanner style from the inside out, and he might do that to Cersei as well, and then Tyrion is going to become the king.
I know. You know what would be really sweet, though, if like George R. R. Martin just ended up being like a huge George A. Romero fan, and it was just decided like this whole thing, he's just been trolling everyone for years, showrunners have to get on with this. White Walkers win. They just take over everyone. Everyone's fucked. That's how world is. You're fucked. End of it. End of the story.
True.
What if he's been...
He seems like the kind of guy who would end it like that and just be like, fuck y'all. White Walkers win.
Well, look, let me just make a case for the Night King and then we'll move on to second lines, all right?
Or ostrich racing.
This guy got
ostrich racing.
This guy got a raw deal. He got a raw deal, okay? For some reason, the Golden Children of the Forest... like caught this dude and tied him to a tree and stuck a magical knife in his heart, and then he became the Night King, and he's like doomed to this forever 5,000 year cycle of coming back and waging war with whoever he can find, except that they built this gigantic wall to keep him in. So now he like lives in a cage like a hamster. He can't get laid, he can't have any fun, he can't talk apparently, and it's kind of a lame existence.
Interesting, actually.
It's kind of a lame existence in a way. But he's raised an army, and he's got the biggest army. And now he's got a dragon. He's done pretty well for himself. That's the
first thing that you guys have talked about.
He's done pretty well for himself.
He's got the biggest army. He's got a big old dragon. It's huge.
This is the first time that I've actually been interested in the show, is what you just described. That was interesting to me.
Well, that's why I think every king needs his queen. And right. Cersei is going to be losing, and she's going to be like, yo, I got some army. He's going to be like, I need a queen. That's it. So he's going to turn her into the Ice Queen. She's going to have the Ice Baby. Jaime is somehow going to kill her in the great battle at the end, because that's what the prophecy is. And then Bran blows up his head from inside like Scanners. That's where I think it's going. You know, it's basically a horror movie.
No, I think
it's an extended horror
movie. I think Jaime is going to kill Cersei, yes. But Jon is going to be the one who either kills the Night King or pushes the White Walkers back. I imagine the only way to do that, really, though, is to kill the Night King. But Bran is going to be using his magical powers to rebuild the wall.
I think James Andrews' punishment for not showing to the podcast tonight is to have to listen to this episode over and over again for like 24
hours. Let me just say this, too.
That's what I think.
Daenerys is going to get killed by Sam. That's where that's going. It's happening. You heard it here first.
Well, I mean, he could definitely have a lot of reasons to do it. I mean, she did just, you know, burn his brother, the one person in his family he actually liked, other than his mom, you know.
Exactly.
Alive. But I don't know. I think he's loyal enough to Jon, unless everything goes ugly with Jon and Dany when they find out that Jon actually has the rightful claim to the throne. Not that I think Jon will really care, but I think Daenerys is going to really, like,
that's what I mean.
Throw a fit.
That's going to be her undoing.
She's going to turn to, like, that crazy ex-girlfriend that Ezekiel Elliott's dealing with right now.
That's going to be her undoing. That's going to be her undoing, definitely. And she's going to be dead, and it's going to be Sam that's going to figure out how to kill her.
Can we do a Dog Out of the Week segment?
Let's do it. Okay, can I do my Dog Out of the Week? Dog Out of the
Pay-per-view.
Pay-per-view. Pay-per-view.
We're talking about pay-per-view.
But it's not just the pay-per-view. It's the pay-per-view for streaming.
Yeah.
The pay-per-view for streaming for the Mayweather McGregor. I can hardly even remember Conor McGregor's name anymore because he's such a nobody.
He's so inconsequential.
He's so inconsequential.
Yeah, I agree.
As a fighter, and I mean, in boxing, I guess they think he's really good in MMA or whatever. But in boxing, he's a nobody, and he proved that. But you couldn't. We had a big party over here.
Like 20 people over here.
We had like 20 people over here. It was
Jeff cooked.
I cooked
a lot of sausage.
I was delighted to finally have a party over here, and to cook for everybody and to get the game on. I paid the money, you know. And I don't know what's going to happen at this point, if we're going to get our money back or not. But I can tell you this. It was a nationwide meltdown on the UFC site. Yep. They were not prepared on any level to stream a fight of this magnitude. They weren't prepared to field an athlete who could compete on any level. They were not prepared whatsoever for the big leagues at all. And it failed. So we had to go up the street to the Jockey's Pub, and watch the game there, watch the fight there, because the guy had it on the TV there, and it was jam packed.
Was it?
In there, you had to go into a corner, and the entire way up the street, Aaron Lambert was telling Tracy and I his theory about how he thought that McGregor had a chance.
Oh boy.
And the funny thing about it was that as he was explaining it, you would have thought that Aaron was of the opinion that McGregor could have up to as much of a 51% chance.
Jeez.
Or a 49% chance of winning it. But the hilarious thing is, like, about a block and a half before we got to the bar, he goes, I'd put his chances at 8%.
I love that about Aaron. Aaron will throw that at you. He'll be like, Rajon Rondo might be an all-star this year. Right. And he'll tell you about it for an hour and then say it's about a half of 1% chance it's going to happen.
Exactly.
But he would have talked to you about it for an hour.
He was telling me the whole way.
Case. And while Rajon Rondo at 32 years old, he can't shoot, shoot free throws, get in the basket, play defense.
Dude, and can I tell you something? Let's talk about like New Orleans and the racial politics that go on in New Orleans and whatnot. Right. Craziness. Is that like you get over there, like Chantilly, Mid-City is the most mixed neighborhood.
Sure.
You know, in the entire city, I would dare say.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe there's some uptown, but anyway, you get in there, and it's like
Pigeontown, Carrollton is similar, maybe like those two like intersections.
It's just all kind of people there that are just absolutely certain, as they ought to be, that Mayweather is going to dominate and he's going to win. Right.
Right.
But on the flip side, there is barely me and maybe one or two other people in the place are the only rational white people that are there, right?
Right. There knows like that McGregor has no
every
chance.
Other white person in there, or even remotely leaning toward being a white person. It's kind of
like old Celtics versus Lakers fans, you know, like when it's like Larry Bird.
No, but the Celtics were good. They actually won a couple of those championships.
That is true. But no, I just mean the whole like race part of it. Like,
exactly. I agree.
They had Dennis Johnson and Robert Parrish. And,
I mean, I'm just going to say this: if you're, come on, people, seriously, Joel, chime in on this, man. I mean, because if you're a sports,
Spencer makes a great point in the sense that what you just said was like a thing that really happened. That the Celtics were the great white hope and that white people like glommed onto the Celtics, right? But this was so unprecedented because McGregor had no fucking chance. And we all knew it going in. Any rational person who's ever known a thing about pugilism, the fucking sweet science, knew that McGregor did not have a chance going into that fight.
Of course. Of course, he didn't have a chance.
Whereas Larry Bird is like one of the best players of all time. They had Robert Parrish, they had DJ, they had a great bench, great coach.
I mean, seriously, like they have a guy in the booth who is a white guy, you know, who just retired a couple of years ago that probably 3 or 4 years ago could have given Mayweather a good little run for his money in Paulie Malignaggi.
Sure.
You know? And it's like, if you're going to bank all of your identity politics into sports, which is the dumbest thing that anybody could possibly do,
right,
is banking racial identity politics in sports. I cannot for the life of me wrap my head
Please
around.
Please stop caring about fucking Colin Kaepernick and him kneeling or not or whatever.
Well, care about that from the standpoint of him being discriminated against.
No.
Because he's better than... You know, he's better than like 30 players in the NFL currently. I mean, and that has to be answered for. But what I mean is this, is like, you know, people who are like, Jeremy Shockey is like the greatest tight end. Like, Jeremy Shockey was doomed to have roughly a 7 to 8 year career in the NFL because people knew that he was a blithering drunk. Right. Who was like being carried out of places, and he had runnels in his forehead that fucking demonstrated that, you know? Like, no 28-year-old man should have runnels in his forehead that look like somebody who's 56 years old hanging out in a bar, you know, for the rest of his life.
That is your pet peeve, though.
It's not a pet peeve. It's what happens.
No, when you're saying the lines in the forehead.
Joel, you only have two. He had like 17, for crying out loud. You know, I mean, it's just
mine are age appropriate.
Yours are age appropriate. Like, right. He was like a 29-year-old guy with these runnels. Anyway, but my point is like, but here's the thing: like every single sports every white person had the Shockey jersey on,
exactly.
Right, like they're just like Jeremy Shockey because these are people bank their identity politics. You know, in the guise of these sports heroes, and Conor McGregor is no different. And I mean, you know, let's face it, even the term "Great White Hope" comes out of boxing.
Exactly,
it does, because boxing has been dominated for so many years. But in truth, in some ways, it hasn't been. So McGregor has been dominant in a few categories in one sport that requires a lot less victories to get to a championship than in boxing.
No, it takes like four fights or something.
It takes like, you can get to a championship in MMA in like 11 to 15 fights.
Oh, easy.
Yeah.
No, I mean, his record's like 17 and four. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like a champion in boxing is like Mayweather, 49-0.
Like you're going to need another 10 fights in boxing with a steady increase in competition in order to get to any kind of bout where you might get a shot at a championship belt.
My biggest issue with the whole thing really is just all the people saying, oh, they should have let him knock him to the ground. They called it too soon. When it was very clear that McGregor couldn't lift his arms up to defend himself anymore.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
At that point, the ref has to call it. It's within like
that's boxing.
Yeah.
That's what the fucking MMA people don't get. That's what boxing is. You don't just pummel someone till they are unconscious.
Yeah. Well, here's the
thing.
That's
how a lot of boxers died, so they made rules so that doesn't happen.
Exactly. I mean, how many, they fight five rounds in MMA of 5 minutes apiece, I think. You get a total of 25 minutes. You ask any MMA fighter like what they feel like at the end of those 25 minutes, right? Okay, take that time and double it.
Right.
Right? And that's what you have for 12 rounds in boxing.
That's why he couldn't lift his arms. No matter how much you train, you're not prepared for that.
You're not
prepared. You cannot simulate it.
Well, not only that, but it's like they don't train for speed is one thing, and the other thing is they don't spend their time holding their stance up. Just doing this for that amount of time, holding your arms up, requires a lot of stamina in your shoulders.
Folks, you ever change a light bulb?
Yeah. Right, like, just take this beer bottle and hold it up for a little while. But anyway, there were all kinds of things like that I thought were significant. But I will say this, that in the first three rounds, I was kind of shocked by the fact that he came out and did as well as he did. However, I'll add this, that is because Floyd Mayweather agreed.
Did not fight.
Well, Floyd Mayweather was fighting in junior middleweight, in a weight class, right?
Right.
So in other words, he's fighting. He agreed at 40 years old, at 40, to go up. This is how confident he was.
Right.
Right. To go up in weight class. I don't think that I've ever seen Floyd Mayweather fight somebody whose body mass was bigger, as big as Conor McGregor's body was compared to him. And it meant this. It meant that Mayweather had to do more of getting in to the radius of Mayweather's punches than he normally does with the other fighters that he fights against. You know, so the fight in the first three rounds looked a lot different. And suddenly, he was getting hit a little bit. But he's 40. And he hasn't fought in 2 years.
I know.
And he announced his retirement, you know, and still he came
And he
in.
Was laughing the whole time. Like, he was barely taking the whole thing seriously.
Not only that, but I got to tell you that he didn't, that is not, I mean, I watched him and I'm like, I'm glad that he's retiring because he does not have what he had.
No, he doesn't.
That's how much better he is. Right, exactly. Yeah. So to me, it was a dominant performance. By the fourth round, Mayweather won every single round all the way out, and McGregor was one more hit to the face.
He was one hit to the face
from being knocked out. You know.
Yeah.
And he can complain about that, but I don't see him.
Ruff had every right to stop that fight.
Of course he did. Yeah, he was done.
When you can't defend yourself, that's when they call the fight.
That's when they call the fight.
That's right. Exactly.
So that was fun. So we did that, and we had the ostrich races on Friday. Spencer, you and I just pass each other like ships in the night on that one.
Yeah, I did not know you were there, but I had a great time at the ostrich races.
I saw the camel race. They race like 40 feet, and they just fall down at the end.
They just fall down, right.
And they're super slow.
I really kind of wish I would have seen the camel races just because, like...
So sad.
Well, seeing
white
people
privilege?
That little on...
The white privilege.
Were you not disgusted by the white privilege at the racetrack on Friday night? I was just like, I looked around. It's like everyone's translucent. Like it's the whitest, most privileged, whitest. And look, I'm a 6'3" white dude, and I understand that as
that you glow.
One of our recent guests said we have inheritance. Who was it? It was Matt, who said that we have white inheritance.
Yeah,
you know, was his preferred terminology as opposed to privilege. But dude. It was like Metairie, fucking like suburban. It's the worst part of New Orleans was at that racetrack, bro. Spencer doesn't seem like he understands what I'm talking about, but I was disgusted by it. I was with this dude, Terrence, who I was with my girl and with Terrence from work. This, like, all of, like, dripping wet, 160-pound black dude. And he didn't get it either. I don't know. Maybe I'm just hypersensitive. But that was just, like, some...
You seem a little sensitive, bro.
There was some white privilege up in that shit, man. I'm just saying, it was kind of gross. It was like, okay, you know, like we talk about the Parkway Tavern sometimes, you know, like places like that.
Oh yeah,
that's what this. That's all this was, man. Like it was like there was so much Golden V up in there, dude. That's a lot of Golden V.
Dude, did I tell you the story about
Spencer? You hip to Golden V?
I don't know what you're talking about at this point. I'm at a bit of a loss, if I'm being honest.
Golden Vagina.
Dude, when we were on the North Shore, riding our bikes, went for a ride.
Well, what's wrong with that?
So many things.
We went for a ride. I told you the story.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So we're riding on the what's called the St. Tammany Trace. And Spencer looks so skeptical tonight. I don't know what's going on. He's got the skepticism face. We stop.
Doesn't like when we rail against white people.
There's this
because Jerry Jones is the whitest dude on the planet.
Well, it could be, you know. There's a place where you can stop. You can get water. It's like a rest stop for cyclists and people who are walking on the St. Tammany Trace, right? And so we get there, and you know, there's some other people that are there, and they're having a conversation about how. This one woman's husband, how, you know, she was using the term, I'm glad my husband, let's call him Keith, right?
Keith is a good one.
Didn't go out there and quote unquote kill some dude who was doing lawn maintenance nearby, wherever it is that they live, in whatever suburban, you know, perfectly groomed place that they live. And because the guy's underwear was hanging out. While he was doing work. And she made sure that she qualified the statement with, the friend asked, was he white or was he Mexican? And she was like, oh, he was white. So Keith didn't go out there and kill him.
Right.
Because his underwear was hanging out. Because that's a violation.
Punishable
either by death.
Everyone knows that.
Or at a minimum, the conversation was about how really seriously.
That's why I don't wear underwear because I'm not taking any chances.
We seriously should have called the police on this person, but basically because he turned out to be white, even though he was like tan, because he's a landscaper.
Right.
So there was some confusion about whether he might.
What was he?
He might be brown. But when they verified his whiteness, the underwear being out and the butt crack showing was okay.
It was a job hazard.
We don't have to call the police, and my husband doesn't have to run out and violently confront and or kill him.
Keith.
Huh. Yeah.
So was it hey Keith, what's your last
name? Fascism isn't real.
How'd they verify that? It was like, Keith, what's your last name? White. He's good.
He's good. Jesus, God. I mean, this is the state. And she's like... So, to your point, right, you know, yeah. This is like a way more egregious display of white privilege, right? So, she's like doing yoga poses, right?
Right.
On this deck, right? And she's stretching out, and she's doing the yoga pose. And the friend's like, what do you do with that leg? And she's like, oh, you want it to be 90 degrees. Keith didn't kill him. He didn't kill him. You want the leg to be 90 degrees out like that. But his underwear was showing like that. It was really Keith gross. People were, and Keith, he's lucky that Keith didn't come out there and kill him. And that was the conversation. And we're within earshot. Wow. And I had to ask Tracy after we were done hearing that because I had kind of like, you know, ear sticker shock. I was like, did we just hear a conversation that was about racially profiling somebody who was doing landscaping work and whether or not it was appropriate to murder that person and or call the police on them because their underwear was showing? And Tracy was like, yep.
That's what we just heard.
That's what we just heard. And I was like, yeah. That's, you know, that's not a good thing. It's not a good thing.
It's not a good thing.
I'm saying that that's not making America great again.
I'm just going to say that I think those people were at the ostrich races on Friday.
They were there. They were there. You think Keith was there?
I think Keith was there.
I didn't really hang out in a big group while I was there, though.
It was
where were you? Where did you stand?
Oh, I went inside.
There were thousands of people there.
I went inside. I found I was chair.
Outside. Yeah, I was outside.
I like to fit.
No, I went inside for a little while, too, but it was when I was outside when I was most disgusted with these people. It was just like the grossest people ever. Whatever, it's like, yeah, I get grossed out if I go to Disneyland. I'm a sensitive dude, you know? I'm like, look at all these
assets. There's a lot of gross people at Disneyland, too, so that's
mostly obese, but yeah.
Disneyland ones too. Or Disney World?
Oh, Disney World's like 10 times worse because it's Florida.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, dude, exactly.
Right. That's true.
That's what I meant. That was my point of reference, was the one in Florida.
That's a stereotype, you know, but
I mean, come on. Fuck them. They deserve
Florida.
It.
Florida.
They deserve it. Panhandle Florida might as well be West Virginia, in all honesty. Just sure. Swampy West Virginia.
Yeah, the Panhandle is my favorite part of Florida.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it might be mine, too.
Well, because it's only southern part of Florida.
Is it just because you haven't been that much to the rest of Florida?
No, I've been. I've been to, like, you know, everywhere else.
Where? You've been to Jacksonville?
I spent a lot of time in Jacksonville. I like Jacksonville.
Oh, yeah, because you're from the Carolinas. Yeah.
And
well, Jacksonville, I still consider southern.
Yeah. I believe Randy's here.
Come in.
Well, we're at 30 minutes. Should we just do a part two with Randy?
Yeah, let's do a part two.
Yeah, Randy Perez is here, y'all.
We'll be back with part two, everybody.
Yeah, we're at 31.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, so Randy's here. We're gonna come back. We're going to talk about some other stuff that's super significant. We're probably going to talk Saints a little bit, right? Saints season right around the corner.
Yeah, you're right.
There might be some Pelican stuff to talk about.
Yeah, you're right.
Some JJ for DD stuff. You got your t-shirts made.
Got that.
We're going to talk about that. So you can see some JJ for DD t-shirts flying around the city here. Before too long, and that's what we're gonna do. Maybe James Andrews is gonna come by. Maybe he's not gonna come by. We're gonna see. It's goodlifebabe.com. Jeff and Joel's Tales from New Orleans. We'll see you on part two, folks.
Yeah, you're right.